Today's audiocast for Monday, June 19th, 2006 is made possible by Aviation Safety, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention. I'm Mike Blakeney reporting for AvWeb's Audio News Service. The FAA's plans to consolidate terminal radar approach control facilities, a move it says will save the agency millions of dollars, has hit a roadblock. Language added last week to the agency's appropriations bill as it passed through the House would prevent the FAA from spending money to combine the facilities. To make the wording stick, a similar measure would have to be passed by the Senate, but there are indications the Senate will behave similarly. Safety concerns born either of natural disaster or terrorism spearheaded opposition to consolidation of centers in Florida. Politicians believe larger facilities would mean larger targets for unfortunate occurrences. The FAA says it takes such matters into consideration and has contingency plans in place. Still, for now, it looks as though the cost-cutting measure may be doomed to be grounded. Meanwhile, in a torrent of regulatory verbosity last week, the FAA issued 5 diesel-related notices of proposed special conditions dealing with its concerns about putting Jet A-powered engines in planes designed to use 100 low-lead. The notices detail the many and varied factors that those seeking diesel STCs from the 2 main manufacturers will have to consider and prove benign. For instance, diesels tend to vibrate more or differently, and the FAA wants to ensure that the vibration, including the shaking that would result from one cylinder shutting down, isn't beyond the tolerances of the airplane or its systems. The FAA is also concerned about the effect of diesel on fuel system components, the adaptation of wiring and other systems, fuel grades, fuel filters, and a host of other technicalities. Other requirements have evolved around the need to protect the Full Authority Digital Engine Controls, FADEC, from electrical interference. Although aircraft diesels have been flying in several types of GA aircraft for almost a decade, supplementary type certificates seem to be fairly rare. And the FAA has come out with a list of special conditions that must be satisfied before the switch is made from 100 low-lead to Jet A. Fuel considerations of a different sort are not entirely removed from the complicated struggle at Delta Airlines. The company, already in bankruptcy, is today expected to apply to the courts to rid itself of the costly burden of its employee pension program. Possibly underfunded to the tune of $10 billion, Delta's pensions could land on the beleaguered Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation as early as September 2nd. The move has been expected for some time, and Delta's pilots have already said they won't oppose it. Take it as a sign of the times. For pilots looking to fly significantly smaller jets, the first Cessna Mustang, not designated for FAA certification testing, took flight last week. In a 2-hour, 20-minute flight, serial number 003 was put through all of its functionality tests in preparation for its role as the company's customer demonstration aircraft. The aircraft is the first of its kind to come off the production line at Cessna's Independence, Kansas assembly plant, which is where the company's piston singles are made. Serial number 004 to 015 will designate revenue-producing aircraft, and they're on the line in Independence now in anticipation of certification by the end of the year. First deliveries of the roughly $3 million jets are expected in 2007. While regular airports all over the country struggle for survival, spaceports, which some argue are a tad less practical, apparently are a growth industry. Oklahoma is the 6th and latest to move to the starting line trying to cash in on the private space race. The Oklahoma Space Industry Development Authority was recently issued a launch site operator certificate by the FAA for its spaceport at Clinton Sherman Industrial Air Park, located adjacent to the town of Burns Flat, Oklahoma. Rocket Plane Limited will be the site's first spacebound tenant. Rocket Plane hopes to take paying customers to experience 3 to 4 minutes of weightlessness by the end of the year. If you're counting those minutes in dollars, expect to use a lot of zeros. The life of a private airport catering to significantly less lofty patrons could soon be cut short by power lines. ComEd is proposing to string high-voltage power lines about 410 feet from one end of the main runway at Reed Airport, near Huntley, a rural Chicago suburb. The airport has an FAA certificate and is owned and operated by Bruce Sternberg. He flies a T-6 out of the grass strip, and other aircraft drop in from time to time, amounting to about 10 to 20 operations a week. The field is part of the 230-acre farm purchased by Sternberg's father-in-law, Howard Reed, then a Delta Airlines pilot in 1971. For 35 years, Reed and later Sternberg lived the dream of flying from their home, but it seems like the dream will end in 2008 with the completion of the power project. The utility will finalize its plans by the end of the year. Already shut down, a well-known Colorado engine and general repair shop closed its doors earlier this month, maybe for good. Employees of Firewall Forward in Loveland, Colorado, returned from lunch to find the doors locked. Consequently, a total of 38 employees are now out of work. Company CEO Andrew Chumney said the company had no other choice when its bank called in about $1 million in loans. Chumney told the Coloradoan News that Firewall Forward was current with its payments, but the bank pulled the financing based on the company's inability to turn a profit. Chumney estimates the company would need an immediate cash injection of about $2.5 million to get going again. AOPA is fighting to save pennies for pilots by protesting a potentially expensive NTSB ruling that it believes would allow manufacturer service bulletins to carry the same legal weight as an airworthiness directive on Part 91 aircraft. The case revolved around an A&P Mechanics engine repair that did not comply with instructions contained in publications issued by the engine and parts manufacturers. The upshot of the legalese, according to AOPA, is that the NTSB's ruling in that case changes the service bulletins from advisory in nature to mandatory under the law. That is neither AOPA nor the FAA's interpretation of the regulation, said Luis Gutierrez, AOPA Director of Regulatory and Certification Policy. While it seems prudent that service bulletins be complied with, the difference here is in who decides what's mandatory. AOPA would like the decision to reside within the FAA, not individual companies. Blimps are often shown on television, but a new aircraft from the Lightship Group is the television. The company, which builds advertising and promotional blimps, has figured out how to attach an array of LED screens to the envelope of a 170 by 50-foot blimp and display any image that can normally be played through a television. It can only display red during the day, but at night it can show a full-color image. Full color for the day is coming. Lightship spokesman Toby Page told the Associated Press the sky-high screen is a real head-turner. Find all these stories and more details online today at avweb.com. Comments on this podcast are welcome. Just email us at audionews@avweb.com. This report was written by Glenn Pugh and has been made possible by Aviation Safety, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention. For more information, click on the AudioCast sponsors link. Look for AvWeb's next AudioCast on Friday, June 23rd. I'm Mike Blakeney. Thanks for listening.